Hello, and welcome to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections podcast called Lockup Lowdown. The goal of this podcast is to provide listeners with information pertaining to all of the aspects of corrections, one issue or one topic at a time. I'm your host, DOC Communications Director Susan McNaughton. Today we are talking about the history and future of medication-assisted treatment, also known as MAT, within the DOC. And joining us today to discuss this issue is the MAT Program Coordinator, Steve Sychek. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Steve, before we get into the nitty-gritty of MAT, would you please provide our listeners with a brief background of your MAT and corrections employment history?
Absolutely. Well, going back, I mean, from a grad school perspective, my background's really clinical psychology. So I was a clinician for a little over a decade, from 92 until 2002, before I went to state government. So all I did was clinical work. When I came to state government, I was in the Bureau of Drug and Alcohol Treatment Programs rather than the Department of Drug and Alcohol Treatment Programs. So in 2006 was when I was with what was called BDAP, and then it turned into DDAP in 2012. Well, I was the director of the Division of Treatment Services at the Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs. Spent about 10 years at that agency. And then in 2016, I came to work for Secretary Wetzel here at the Department of Corrections as a statewide medication-assisted treatment coordinator.
Excellent. What a great history. We're glad to have you.
I'm glad to be here.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty of medication-assisted treatment. So can you please, for our listeners, explain to everybody what MAT is?
Really, it's quite simplistic. It's really just combining medication with counseling services, okay? So when you think about MAT, the key word is assisted. So medication is assisting the treatment. It is not replacing the treatment. Whenever you look at different research experiments and studies, you'll see, you know, one group gets medication, the other group only gets the counseling, and then a third group gets the medication and the counseling. And every single time you look at studies like that, you will see that combining medication with counseling services always, and I mean always, gives you a much higher percentage success for a better outcome. Mm-hmm. Now, does it guarantee success? Of course not. Nothing guarantees success. This disease that we're talking about, you know, specifically opioid use disorder, is brutal. It is very difficult to treat. It is very difficult for individuals to overcome this, but it is absolutely possible. And there's a lot of ways to get there. Medication is a very good step in the right direction.
Wow, excellent. So when and how did the DOC begin using MAT?
So back in 2014, the DOC piloted Vivitrol at SCI Muncie. Now, we didn't have a full-time coordinator. So between 2014, the beginning of the pilot, until March of 2016, when I was hired,
right,
there really wasn't a whole lot of staff time that was able to be dedicated to getting Vivitrol really up and running throughout the system. So when I started in 2016, that really gave a boost to the program, only because now all of my time is being spent on MAT, nothing else. So we were able to go from a small pilot at Muncie that got expanded to about five other male institutions to, within 2 years, we have Vivitrol now available at every single SCI we have across the Commonwealth.
Wow. And what were some of the challenges that you faced right as you were starting with the DOC?
Well, unfortunately, stigma is alive and well. Stigma is definitely the number one issue, I would say, is a huge barrier or challenge. Getting people to buy in to medication-assisted treatment you would think would be fairly simplistic because there are stacks of scientific evidence to show you that MAT is incredibly effective, and it's really considered the gold standard of treating opioid use disorder. Mm-hmm. Okay, once again, I think it bears repeating, it is truly considered the gold standard of care. Once again, going back to in the beginning when we talked about, well, what is MAT? Remember, you're having medication, you're adding it to counseling services, you're doing both. So once again, I think it's important for everyone to realize that we're not saying that taking this medication, whichever one you take, is going to be the end-all be-all. What we're saying is it will give you a better chance of having success in what will be a battle for the rest of your life. No differently than if I was suffering from bipolar disorder, I would have to deal with bipolar disorder for the rest of my life. I would have to control it. I'd have to try and go to counseling for it. There's a very good chance that I'm going to be on medication for the rest of my life, which, hey, you know, there are a lot worse things you can have than having a medication that comes in and really changes your life for the better. Right. I take several medications every single day, and several of them I will probably take my entire life. Mm-hmm. I have no problem doing that. And I try not to let other people make me feel bad because I've decided to use a very smart way of dealing with medical problems. Right. Now, I'm not, once again, medication in and of itself is only good to such a point. You have to do behavioral things as well. So there are plenty of things that I'm doing behaviorally on top of doing medication with my diet and with exercise that fits that MAT model.
And the individuals that we're working with kind of have two things against them, right? So they've got this substance use disorder, but they're also individuals that are going to try to return to society, which alone is very difficult. So, you know, actually this is something that will really help to put them on the right path and curb their craving for the drug while they are also attempting to succeed at reentry.
The word you just said, craving, is the key ingredient here, is that these medications reduce craving in a very substantial manner, okay? So Vivitrol, for instance. Vivitrol is amazing when you talk to individuals that have been taking it for many, many months. When you listen to them describe the reduction in cravings, it is something that almost is magical in a way. Mm-hmm. It's really incredible. The first time I went to a Vivitrol clinic was back in 2010, and talking with individuals on the medication. Some were on it for only a couple of months. Some were on it for almost a year. There's no set time frame for how long you're on that medication.
Okay.
So it's really an individualized type of a treatment plan that you would want to take with your physician, with your counselor. So because everyone, you know, is going to require somewhat of a different, I would call, level of care. So whether that's intensive outpatient, regular outpatient, or inpatient, long-term residential care. Everyone's going to need something a little bit different. And, you know, work comes into play here. Our folks, when they get out of an institution, they have a hard time finding employment.
Right.
When they do find employment, every now and then we're getting barriers because the level of care that people want to put them in is somewhat of a barrier for them getting MAT in going to some providers that are locked down units and people aren't permitted to leave, and, you know, getting somebody to go in to implement MAT can have its complications. So we have a demographic, our folks, who are very susceptible to overdose upon release. It is unbelievable the percentage higher at risk that they are than the average citizen. It's absolutely, wow, off the charts. So this is something that truly is a matter of life and death. And wow, that's not overstating it.
Amazing. So tell me what the plans are to actually expand the use of MAT beyond where we are now and the different drugs that are involved or you plan to have involved.
Sure. So the drug that I'm dealing with right now that's at the top of my to-do list is getting buprenorphine into our system of care. So we're going to be doing a pilot program at SCI Muncie, very similar to what we did in 2014 with Vivitrol. So we're going to go up to Muncie. They have the staff and the expertise that will be able to implement this pilot, once again, using buprenorphine, specifically Sublocade. Sublocade is the first FDA-approved injectable form of buprenorphine. So when you talk to most people in the prison and you ask them, what kind of contraband drives you crazy that comes in? And they'll say Suboxone.
Right.
Because whenever someone hears that term Suboxone, most people know what they're talking about. When I say the word buprenorphine, people are like, what?
Right.
Or they'll say, excuse you? So buprenorphine is the active ingredient. That's the medication. So for instance, with Vivitrol, the drug is naltrexone. Naltrexone is the active ingredient. If you go to Narcan, which is the rescue medication, the active ingredient is naloxone.
Right.
Not to be confused, once again, with naltrexone, which, when it's injected, is Vivitrol. Okay?
Yeah.
So we have Sublocade that is available in a monthly injectable. Okay? It's the first FDA-approved monthly injectable out there, and that's going to get rid of the issue of diversion, okay?
Okay.
So diversion, for those who aren't really familiar, is if I have a 30-day supply of Xanax. I'll use that as an example. So I have 30 pills in my bottle of Xanax. So if I take it as prescribed, then I should have really no problem taking Xanax or getting addicted to Xanax because I'm taking it as prescribed.
Right.
Okay. We don't want to demonize medications. However, if I say, hey, Sue, hey, I've got some Xanax. If you're interested, I'll sell it to you for like $5 per pill. Okay. So me selling it to you or giving it to you is called diversion.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm diverting it away from its intended use, and now I'm selling it or giving it to other people that should not be taking this. So we have to get away from looking at Suboxone as contraband and looking at it more as simply medication. One of the other reasons implementing buprenorphine would make sense is that if you have a lot of contraband going into the institution, and that contraband is Suboxone, common sense would tell me that if I am medically treating folks appropriately, that I will reduce and or eliminate the black market for Suboxone. So if I'm treating people, so we're on the same cell block, okay? And there's a few of us that keep purchasing Suboxone, okay? What I want to do is I actually want to treat those individuals medically. I want to put them on buprenorphine, okay? And get them on a dose that's right for them. They're not going to be getting high on this medication. Maybe the very first day that someone takes this medication, you can feel that opiate in your system, just like anybody would. If someone's not used to having opiates in their system, you give them an opiate-based medication, they're going to feel it. But once you're taking it day after day after day, you get used to it and you won't even feel it in your system at all.
Right.
So looking at Suboxone as medication rather than contraband is going to be difficult. But one way to make that easier is if I can show some success in getting individuals on a form of this medication that cannot get diverted.
Okay.
So that's one of the main ingredients of why I think that we're on the right path and we're picking something that's smart. Not just that it's FDA approved, but it makes common sense for our demographic. It would be much better to be able to give somebody an injection that lasts a month than giving them a 30-day supply of Suboxone strips.
That they may or may not
take. They may or may not take. And we're also putting them into a difficult situation. If you give somebody who has opioid use disorder, if you give that person an abundance of opiates for them to have in their house and think that it's going to be easy for them to take this as prescribed, then we aren't really understanding truly the disease of addiction, how it affects your brain, how it affects your reward circuits, and how it really kind of rewires your brain so that getting opiates is the only thing that's going to matter, and consequences don't really come into play anymore, or else we wouldn't have all of these individuals getting arrested and rearrested and rearrested, getting overdose after overdose. So, like I said earlier, relapse is a very normal part of the addiction process. This is a brutally difficult disorder to treat, to go through. As anyone who has experienced it knows firsthand, that it is a lifelong battle. And just like people with diabetes, people with cardiovascular disease, there are solutions. Some of the solutions aren't necessarily fun. However, there are solutions, and medication is definitely a very big part of that solution.
Boy, this is really informative, Steve. I really appreciate you coming and talking to us. Is there anything additional that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think it's important for folks to understand the scientific advancements that have been made in the past few decades. So when you look at brain scanning technology, we have many things that the average person is very familiar with. You have CAT scans, mm-hmm. you have MRIs.
Right.
But you also have what's called a PET scan, uh-huh. PET, like having a pet. So it stands for positron emission tomography, which we don't have to worry about. But a PET scan is a very advanced brain scan that we're able to really see the brain working as we are using it. We can monitor how drugs enter the brain, where things bind. So for instance, heroin is going to bind at what's called the mu opioid receptor. So mu being from the Greek letters, mu. So the mu opioid receptor is just one type of an opiate receptor, but that's the key receptor that is being focused on when you look at these medications that are being offered. So whenever you're looking at, Vivitrol is going to take naltrexone, and naltrexone is going to bind to that mu opioid receptor, and its affinity is very strong, meaning it's going to be very, very difficult for anything to get that off of that receptor site. Okay, so when naltrexone enters your system, it binds to that mu opioid receptor, and it basically creates a blockade. Mm-hmm. So if I injected heroin into my system, I wouldn't feel any of its effects. It would have no place to bind. The receptors wouldn't pick it up. So I'm not going to feel anything from that.
And so then there's no need to try heroin again.
Well, possibly. That's part of the idea of, MAT. So the scientific advancements have given us a much better understanding of how the brain reacts to drug addiction, how it reacts to drug abuse. But the brain, just like any other part of our body, that's amazing is that it can also heal. So I used to smoke a pack and a half of cigarettes a day for many years. And when I decided to quit because I was giving a, you know, horrible, you know, message to my then toddler daughter, who's now at Temple University, when I quit smoking, the day that I quit smoking, the very next day, my lungs are going to start healing, but they're not going to heal overnight. It's going to take day by day by day by day. And then over years, if you look at my lungs 5 years after smoking versus 2 years after smoking versus 10 years after smoking, you would see great differences. Well, you're going to see the same thing in some PET scans with brains that are addicted to drugs and brains that are less addicted to drugs. And that are in the healing process. So you can actually see a brain scan from when the brain was being affected very negatively, where now a couple of years being abstinent from those illicit drugs, now you're able to see some of those areas slowly getting healed. But it takes a very, very long time, which in today's society of, you know, instant gratification, it makes MAT that much more difficult because most of us expect resolution to occur within a day, maybe.
Right.
You know, I can go in and I always say to people, Google will tell me whatever I want to know. Anything I need to know, I'll just ask Google. And for the most part, it's accurate. Well, this is definitely not going to fall into that category. This is a day by day by day kind of a thing. And I know that's a cliche, taking a day, you know, one day at a time. However, it's a cliche because it's true. And really, I try and do my daily job day by day. I try not to look ahead too much. I try not to look behind too much. I try and focus more on what's in front of me. So it's a different mindset.
Right.
And it's hard. It's very hard.
So you have to retrain everybody to get on that path, but it's the path to success. It really is.
It's the path to success, but you have to make sure that folks understand that this is a lifelong struggle. I don't want to say that to be pessimistic. It's realistic. And there are plenty of people that I know that have very good lives right now who at one point in their life weren't looking very good.
Yeah.
So it just takes a little bit of patience and a lot of perseverance and hopefully less stigma.
Excellent. Well, Steve, we thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to give us the lowdown on medication-assisted treatment. And listeners can learn more about the DOC and its MAT program by visiting the DOC's website at www.cor.pa.gov. This concludes this episode of Lockup Lowdown. We'll see you next time.